Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Her Podcast. Welcome to our show in episode 493 as we share the truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today her rush hour of life. What the heck? What is that? You're going to find out shortly. Before we begin this episode, know that it's sponsored by Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs Rooted in Nature. That's S-O-L-A-R-A-Y, vitamins. And, you know, they have a special gift for women, the new award-winning Her Life Stages products, providing support for the menstrual years, including PMS, all the way through perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause. It's a whole integrative, holistic approach to having a woman's back throughout her entire life journey. To learn more about Her Life Stages, run on over to your local health food store, go to Amazon, you could go to Whole Foods, Sprouts, and even the website, solaray.com, solaray.com. And if you go to the website, use HER20 as a promo code for 20% off. All right. Now, here's your first reminder. Click on iTunes after the episode to rate and review today's show because we love to hear from you. All right. It's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life.
It's all about her.
I want you to think. I don't know how old you are out there. But if you've already skated through your 30s and 40s, maybe you're either like 45 to 50 or something right now, do you even remember what happened? I feel like, well, it's like that plane that flies from New York to LA and you just sort of fly over the hinterland. And someone says, I don't know, something happened. I was 30, I was 40. I don't know what's going on. And that's the way I've always thought about it. And of course, you know, given the fact that I'm a physician, I was doing a lot of training during that time. And I think life was sort of, you know, happening somehow for somebody. And then one day I woke up and I said, damn, like I'm 33. What the heck is that? What does it mean to me? What am I supposed to start doing? Of course, we have a little word that we start using probably in, you know, in the last 5 years is called adulting. I didn't know that word at the time, but I kind of like it. Not really quite sure what the hell it is, but we're going to find out today. And our wonderful guest is Dr. Claire Mehta. Now, Dr. Mehta is professor of psychology at Emmanuel College in Boston and a staff scientist in the Division of Adolescent Medicine at Boston Children's Hospital. She holds a Master's of Research in Education from the University of Bath. Okay, I've been there. Oh my God, I just love Bath. And I'm sure I'm saying it wrong. And a Master's of Science and PhD in Lifespan Developmental Psychology from West Virginia University in the US of A, as we say now. And current research for Dr. Mehta is focused around what she calls established adulthood. We're going to hear more. The period of development from 30 to 45, the hinterland that we flew over. Okay, and she has been published everywhere, and everyone wants a piece of her. And I heard her on a podcast with the American Psychological Association. And then, of course, when I was reading her background, just to kind of see, you know, my whole team said, get her. We love this, right? And I found, you know, when she had a little piece here on her lifespan lab, which she'll tell us about, all about her. And she said, outside of work, Dr. Mehta enjoys meeting new people. That's me. Drinking white wine spritzers. You're not going to believe this. I love those. And eating bowls of chips. Maybe not so much. She tolerates running. I'm a senior Olympic triathlete. I know the feeling. And has recently been cited climbing gingerly up walls at indoor climbing gym. There is no gingerly. You're either climbing and sweating and looking like an idiot, or you're not. And displaying no athletic prowess whatsoever. The minute I read that paragraph, I said, she's for us. Dr. Mehta, welcome to the Her Podcast.
That is the best introduction anyone has ever given me. And I love that you dug up that description of myself. And I do want to be very clear that those bowls of chips, and I recognize when I'm talking to a physician, this never goes well, is English chips. So French fries, and in particular, chunky ones are my favorites.
So those big mothers that I get when I'm over in the UK. Yeah.
That's exactly
it. It's like, oh, good. It's a 20-pound French fry. Yeah. Like one of those things.
Yes, absolutely. 100% my favorite. That and a glass of wine, and I'm happy.
Okay. Well, first of all, I can listen to your accent forever. Where are you actually from?
So I'm from a town called Swindon, which is 80 miles west of London in the UK. So it's very close to Bath, in fact. So if you went from London to Bath on the train, you went through Swindon.
I'm not kidding you, the Orient Express to Bath.
Oh my goodness.
And it was way fun. You know, the old murder on the Orient Express thing. And I was like, you know, who's going to die while we're on this thing? But it was more fun. I bought a beautiful sweater there that I wear in the winter time that always brings back such wonderful memories. And so I kind of like all this. This is kind of very cool. So here you are. You're a psychologist, right? Professor of psychology. How did you get into looking at the one time in a person's life that we just sort of blow over, like we're just like running through it, and then you wake up one day and you're 50. You're like, what happened? So what got you interested in this whole experience about established adulthood? Tell us what that is and why you got into it.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to tell you this. I'm a storyteller and I like telling stories. So the story really is that I am trained as a lifespan developmental psychologist, and I'm going to use this opportunity to tell people that, and I think all of your listeners know, just being human, that development does not stop once you reach 18. And I think historically there was this kind of belief that you are suddenly fully baked and you're an adult and you're out in the real world and you're kind of done developing. And we know that that's not true. And so as a lifespan developmentalist, I'm interested in development across the entire lifespan. And so I teach lifespan development classes, and I've been kind of wallowing in this area for quite a long time. And when I became an established adult, we have the saying, research is me-search. You've probably heard this in medicine as well, that we like to do research that is relevant directly to ourselves and our own lives. And so I'm teaching all of these classes and thinking, where am I in this lifespan? So I teach child development. Like I said, I've taught lifespan development. So I teach child, adolescent development, and then we have adulthood and aging, which really is just aging because we spend most of our time in these classes talking about 65 and above. And I noticed this just from teaching classes, but then I was having my own experience of being in the hinterland, and I started noticing that a lot of intense things were happening, not just to me, but to my friends around me. So I was seeing people making decisions about getting married, making decisions about getting divorced and then going through divorces. You know, it happens. Making decisions about whether or not to have children, making these huge career changes. Like that to me was really interesting, that people who had been on one path all of a sudden hit, like you were saying, 32, 33. And it's like, what am I doing with my life? I've been training and trying to get to this end point, but I'm realizing maybe this end point isn't actually the right end point for me. I want to do something different. So seeing all of this changing, and then at the same time, I'm an academic, so I collect books. I just really, really like books, and I love used bookstores, and I would go in and come out with 5 or 6 books with all of these intentions to read them. And I had a moment when I looked on my bookcase and realized, I am going to die before I get to all of these books.
Done that. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I was 37 at the time. And I just remember thinking, I'm not actually going to live long enough to get through all of these. And it could have been a really depressing moment, but I found it to be really freeing, because then immediately I was like, right, I'm getting rid of this book, this book, this book. And it just gave me a different way of looking at my life. So rather than thinking about time that's passed, which I think we do a lot when we're younger, I started thinking about time that I have left and how I want to spend that time and use it most effectively and get the most joy I can out of my life with what's left. And so as all of this was happening, I was thinking, there is something about this period of the lifespan that no one is studying that has there's all of these exciting and interesting things happening to my friends. I'm having this shift in the way I perceive time, and no one's studying it. And I kind of joke around to people in my age period that it's because we're all so busy just trying to survive this period, because we've got so many different things that we're trying to balance. But then I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to give it a name. And once it's got a name, we can study it.
I love it. And so, you know, I don't know anyone else who's done this, because, you know, I've been looking at lifespan specifically in women for quite some period of time, but they sort of jump. They go, well, and then they were 21 and then they had a baby and they were 35. And you're like, well, wait a minute. What do you call the time from 18 until 30? So what is that?
So that's emerging adulthood. And one of my colleagues, and I will also say dear friend at this point, Jeff Arnett, has conceptualized that period. And that period is super interesting too, because this is when I love talking about it and I teach people in this age period that it's really this time of opportunities and exploration and figuring out who you are, what you want to be, where you're going. You're very optimistic about the future. And time at that point, if you can, you know, remember your 20s, it's getting harder and harder for me to remember it. But in this sense,
be cool now, you know. In a little while, you know. I mean, you don't have to laugh that hard.
But, you know, like time just felt endless then, that you had forever to make decisions and to figure stuff out. So it's kind of this amazing period of opportunity and exploration. And I should say that's for most people. There are some people that don't get that privilege of being able to figure out who they are and what they're doing.
I was talking to my nephew the other day, and he is now 20. And he just got accepted to graduate school. He's over the moon. And he'll be starting that in a year and very excited. And then he got kind of quiet for a moment. I said, hey, what's going on? And he said, I don't know. I'm going to have to do that thing. And I said, well, what is that thing? He said, adulting. He says, I have to, like, I'm not going to be in a dorm or, you know, sharing a house with other. He said, I'm going to actually have to, like, find an apartment, you know, like a radical thought. Like, that was very funny that he should say that, because now these younger people are using that word as a way of kind of like saying, okay, time to get serious. Is that what you hear?
I do hear, and it's funny because you said you like this term. I don't love it, and I'm going to tell you why. Because even the way you said it just now, there's a negative connotation of it. It's not like, I'm going to go out and do this fun and exciting thing, and I get to be an adult. It's like, ugh, I'm adulting. People say it in that way, right? Or like, ugh, I have to adult today. And, oh, I hate adulting. And I think it makes people afraid to get older and to become adults because we see it negatively.
That's a really, really excellent point. And I can, you know, I've avoided being an adult most of my life as best I can. And so far, I've been quite successful. So then when you're in your 30s and 40s, so I think you said, why don't you define what it means to have an established adult?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So the way that we conceptualize it is we think about it as being this period. So we're saying 30 to 45 is the age period we're looking at. And of course, it differs for people. Like, some people might actually become established adults earlier and some people might do it later. But if you're going to study something, you need to put some boundaries around it. So that's what we did. So when we think about this period, we think about it as a time of navigating a number of different responsibilities, and they all come at the same time. So we talk about this career and care crunch, where you're expected to be getting ahead in a chosen career. You're supposed to be maintaining a romantic relationship, or if you don't have one, you might be looking for one, and that takes a lot of time and effort. For people who might choose or not choose to have children, this is a period where a lot of people are having children or making decisions about whether or not they want to have children. And if you do decide or accidentally end up with children, then you're raising young children during this period, all at the same time that you're trying to survive as a human being, get ahead at work. And I think one of the things when I talk about this a lot that I don't often talk about, but that is really, really important, is also maintaining your friendships, because we know there's a loneliness epidemic. And if you're trying to balance all of these different things, and balance, I actually don't like that word very much. This is why we say career and care crunch, because if you're balancing something, there's a suggestion in that that you actually can balance things. And you can't. I think most people feel like they're doing well in one domain of their life and completely failing in another, or just failing at everything because they're trying to do too much. So those are the main characteristics of this age period, is essentially just being really, really busy, which is why people don't remember it.
I know. It's like, and that loneliness factor, do statistics bear that out?
Well, I can tell you from interviewing people in this age period that this is something I hear again and again and again.
Really?
Yeah. One of the quotes when I interviewed someone that has really stuck in my head was, she was describing her friendship network. And she said, my friendship circle is really more of a dot. I used to have friends. And somebody else said something like that too, where they said, in theory, I have friends, I just never see them. And so you do start to see these friendship networks retract as people get so busy, it's hard to keep up with their friends.
So here's the burning question for the Her podcast. How about her? So in other words, do women do this differently, this whole issue of adulthood differently, establish adulthood? And for that matter, do they do emerging adulthood differently? Is there some kind of a parallel universe for men and women in this?
Yeah, well, I think there definitely is. And the easiest difference to see, especially in established adulthood, is that the career and care crunch does disproportionately burden women. So in my interviews, I talked to a male participant and asked whether he felt the career and care crunch. And his response was, well, it's harder for me to go and play golf for a whole day now I have kids.
Oh, can I just cry a river here?
I know.
Give me a break already. I pity you. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. I know. This is exactly it. And you just hear when you're asking women about this, they're like, oh my goodness, this exists. I am exhausted. I am trying to do so much. I feel like I have no support. And I think this, again, like I keep talking about the friendships part, but I think this is where friendships could actually be really helpful to people in this age period. When you feel as though you are drowning as a woman, because you have all of these different responsibilities, and we still know that women disproportionately provide the most care, whether it's to children, whether it's to pets, family members. There's a lot of research that suggests that in a heterosexual couple, when a man and a woman are married, the woman oftentimes ends up taking care of her husband's family. If the mother needs help, the father needs help, yeah, it ends up being the wife, even though she's not directly related to these people. So, yeah, I think there's a huge difference in the way that men and women do established adulthood. And I think there is so much burden on women. And I mean, I can keep going and going and going, because I think especially for people who choose or end up having children, the burden ends up being very, very great. And as an English person, I can't help myself. I always just have to talk about how hard it is to have children in the US. I just had a baby, by the way. I should be clear about that.
Oh, and
I
can't call. Congratulations.
Thank you. And I've got to stop saying this because she's a year old now, but it feels as though
right,
I just
well,
had a baby.
Well, congratulations anyway.
Yes. Yeah. And so I'm now feeling the career and care crunch in a way. When I was first conceptualizing this, I didn't really know. I was just writing about it. And the cost of childcare and what it means to have a child in a country that does not have provision for childcare. And if you look at other developed countries, I think for most developed countries, the average is about $14,000 a year. And so for women trying to balance all of this, where there's not affordable care options, you see people's careers start to slow down and drop off.
I mean, I think your point is superb on that one, because if you've looked at, I'm sure you have, the global fertility rates, it's just unbelievable. I think South Korea's the worst now. I think they're actually sub one. What am I talking about? It's the number of children per woman, or you know, the unit, the family unit, and what you actually require to be able to financially sustain and support older people. So you pay into it, as it were. So you've got people who are working and contributing on an annual basis in the United States, is Social Security and all the rest of that. And each country has different pension systems. France has a whole different thing. But in most of the Western countries, the fertility rate has plummeted. And we used to be, I can remember a time when we were like five to one, which is like fantastic. I mean, we had five kids in my family, so somebody must have gotten the memo. But really, at the end of the day, we're down to like 1.4, 1.6-ish, which is horrific. It's not enough to sustain the very huge demographic of older people. And then you ask yourself why. That's across the board, the Western European countries, including the UK. UK's is falling too in a big way. And it's because there's just no support. You know, who's supporting all of this? And so you have countries like Hungary, which have very sophisticated systems that just absolutely lay down a beautiful red carpet for couples that want to have a child and all the rest of it, and just significant investment in these people, you know, in these children. And so to your point, it is very, very tough. It's extremely tough right now.
It is. And interviewing established adult women in particular about this and about making decisions around whether or not to have children. So I interviewed women who did not have children and were kind of going back and forth and trying to decide if they wanted to or not. What I heard time and time again was, I have to give up so much if I decide to do this. So I have to give up freedom was a big thing. Like, I can't travel. I can't live the life that I'm living. My career is going to suffer. My relationships are going to suffer. And there's not good options for childcare. It's going to be very, very expensive. So a lot of people feel as though they need to achieve a certain level of financial security. They need to have a house. They need to have a good salary. They need to be settled in their career before they can have children. But the way that our society is structured right now, it's really hard, especially for people living in urban areas. So I'm living in Boston, and I'm not sure what the mean property price is, but I can tell you, you cannot get anything within probably 20 miles of Boston for less than like 500 or 600,000. And that's a condo, like a very small one bedroom condo. If you want a house, it's in the millions. And so it's very, very hard for people, for emerging adults and for established adults, to get on that property ladder. And a lot of people don't want to have children if they don't feel that they have that kind of security. And again, giving up the freedom, I think, is really, really hard for people.
Yeah. The other thing I think about, and this is a little side note to all my wonderful people in the Her podcast audience, when you get older, who's going to take care of you? If you don't have children, how's that going to work? It's something that young people in this 30 to 40, well, kind of 30-ish age range, this is something that they are not thinking about, because quite frankly, you know, 50 is like ancient to them and, you know, all the rest of it. And they're not really thinking beyond that. And you know something? I think everyone needs to understand that as you get older, it's awfully nice not only to have someone there where you know you can rely upon them for some caregiving. I don't mean like you're, you know, mooching off them. I'm just saying. And at the same time, what about grandchildren? What about ever seeing a grandchild or back and forth? Now, I'm just sort of throwing that out there just as a kind of an interesting provocative thought as we're going through this. So back to the 30s and your wonderful research here, how can you optimize the 30s and 40s, this whole time during this adulthood time? How do you best optimize it, understanding the considerable challenges?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. And I'll let you know when I figure it out because okay. I'm suffering
well,
myself.
You let me know when you publish that paper.
Yes. And I do think, I mean, there are things like I keep mentioning the friendships, but trying to figure out ways to find supports for people. So I think this was, and I'm glad that you asked this question because this is where we need to go to next. So right now we're just documenting, what does this look like? What is people's lived experience of this age period? And then the next step is really figuring out, well, how can we support people in this age period? And I think for now, I keep thinking about what we can do on a kind of broader policy level. So having child and elder care that can help people, that can kind of release some of this burden. And I think healthcare actually is something that's really important. Coming from the UK, where you don't have to be employed to have access to healthcare, because we have the National Health Service, which I know is not doing so well right now, but at least it is there and is a safety net for people. It means that if you want to take some time off of work for a while, if you want to work part-time because you need time to look after aging parents, to look after your children, or to look after community members, whatever it is you're involved with, you can do that easily because you don't need to have a job to have healthcare. And I think that is another huge problem. It's like one of these issues that people may not think about right away when we're talking about having some form of universal healthcare, but it really does matter and make a difference in people's lives. And then I think therapeutically, I'm not that type of psychologist, I'm a developmentalist, but I think that just being able to validate people and say, yes, this is a really hard period of the lifespan and you are not going through this by yourself. There are lots of people who feel the same way you do. And I think with one of my colleagues, Linda Lynn, who's here at Emmanuel College, we're talking about developing some kind of group interventions for people in this age period where they can come together and just talk about what's going on and the things that they're struggling with and have this connection. And it also serves this role of helping people facilitate friendships during a period of the lifespan when it's really hard to make new friends.
You know, what I find is if you are a young mother during this time, then sometimes the mothers get together and they can commiserate and share. And I think that that's exceptionally important. You know, women are awfully good at, I got to give it up for us. We're really good at forming our little communities. You know what I mean? And so I think that that I've seen happen very commonly. It's like, you know, three young women get together and they become besties and they all share. And at the same time, if they happen to be neighbors or whatever, they could be relying upon one another when they need them one way or the other. So kudos to that. And this is also a time when you're forming extremely important and oftentimes lifelong relationships. Tell us about the importance of these connections and relationships.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is a time where a lot of people find partners or get married. And I think it's worth also pointing out that the age of first marriage has gone way up. So it's around 30 now. It's hovering at around 30.
That just blows my mind. It's like, wow, what were you doing for the last 10 years?
Yeah. And that's, I mean, I think this is, everything has shifted upward because of the emergence of emerging adulthood, where you have all this time to explore and figure out who you are. So people don't want to settle down early. They want to try out different relationships.
This is an exploration, adventuresome time, try new things out, scope it out, that type of thing. I see that. I have a beloved niece who is like a daughter to me. She's amazing. And I saw her do the same thing. She is probably like the, how shall I say this? She's probably the queen of emerging adulthood. So the minute she graduated from our alma mater, which is Berkeley, she's just absolutely brilliant. I mean, I'm not saying that just because she, you know, she's mine, but she truly is. And so everyone expected her to say, well, and now I'm going to apply to blah, blah graduate school. And instead, she's a great athlete. And she was on the cycling varsity team at Berkeley. And she could take a bike apart. These are very expensive bikes, and put it right back together again and never ask anyone for help. She is brilliant with this stuff. Now, this is going to also lead to where she's going to go. So she just made this general announcement. She goes, well, we were all there for the big graduation, whatever. She goes, you know, for the next 3 months, and we all sucked in our breath, she says, what I'm going to do I started the Golden Gate Bridge, and I'm going to bike by myself solo across the United States to Maine. And, you know, my sister, who's her mom, fainted just about and said, "What?" And of course, I'm like totally right there with her. And I'm going, "Yeah, let's do this." And she just made it happen. She met people along the way. There's apps where you find really cool places to stay. And she, 3 months across there. And then we thought, is she going to settle down? Is she going to get that graduate degree? You know, and she goes, no. I think I'm going to work in a bike shop for a little while. Now, this is someone with a Berkeley degree, you know, magna cum laude, you know, she's going to work in a bike shop. So my sister again fainted. She's doing a lot of fainting. And I'm like, yeah, this is cool. Because I love that motto from Helen Keller, life is either a daring adventure or nothing at all. We're going with the daring adventure. So she did that for a little while. Then she got bored, which I knew she would. Then she started doing some work. Now, this was curious. Here we go. Stay with me. She started working for a startup. And this is all in California, Silicon Valley-ish stuff and whatever. And I said, what kind of startup? And she said, well, it involves a certain kind of chemical material and very interesting engineering stuff and back and forth. And I'm thinking, And her degree was in environmental sciences. So I think, oh, I'm starting to smell some graduate work here. And so still gunning for that graduate degree. So she did it and for a little bit. And lo and behold, the damn company got sold and she had some equity in it. So now she had a little cash in her pocket. So she went to another startup and then something happened. I got the phone call. And at this point in time, right, she said, you know, Aunt Pam, I'm going to go to graduate school. Of course, I fainted this time.
Yes, what you've been waiting for.
What are you going to do? And she says, I'm going to be a material science engineer. And I said, let me look that one up because I'm a doctor. What the hell do you do with them? Anyway, so I said, where are you going to go? University of Colorado. And I said, oh, why? She says, because I'm a mountain climber and I want to go there and I don't want to go to any other place, no matter how good it was, and back and forth. Well, long story short, 2 weeks ago, she defended her thesis successfully and is now a PhD. And now when we stand together, we are known as a paradox.
I love that.
Oh my God. And so now you want to know how old she is? She's 31. So she spent those years in graduate school becoming an engineer. And then when I asked her, big question, you know, she has someone very special in her life and, you know, it looks as though they're going to be a lifetime thing. And he's also a PhD. And so I said, so what are you going to do after this? She's going to go into the astronaut program. So if you think there's going to be a family, and I said, would you please have a kid before you do that? But you see what's happening is she's STEM, all right? So she's the T and the E of STEM, the technology and engineering, and she's trying to wedge all this in. She went exploring, like you said, perfectly spot on. Now she's doing this kind of adulting thing. And it's almost like, don't you wish there were an extra 10 years in there during which time a woman could procreate? What do you think?
Yes. And I love that you brought this up because this is what I think a lot of women feel. And this was great. This story, by the way, is a perfect illustration of both emerging and established adulthood, that you go from emerging where you do all this exploration. And I mean, this is a perfect, the exploration was right there, that you try out these different things, figure out what you want to do. And then you usually decide and commit to a career path. And that may still end up changing when you get to established adulthood. I've seen that, but generally, you're thought to like choose, this is the way that I'm going. And so to hear that, but then exactly what you said, now you've got this pressure because you've just got a doctoral degree. You want to use that and you want to like build your career. But at the same time, your fertility is starting to wind down. And so we have people relying on assisted reproduction. And even I can say my generation. So I will also tell my story a little bit, which is I I married my husband when I was 39, and then we started trying for a child immediately, and we're old, he's old too, and it just wasn't working. So we did IVF. And the thing that people don't always recognize when you're younger, I keep hearing from my friends who are in their early 30s, 32, 33, 34, like, if I'm not pregnant by 35, I'm going to freeze my eggs. And this is seen as the solution. Like, I still need to build my career. I'm going to freeze my eggs. But there's no guarantee that that is going to work. And I think a lot of women think that it is kind of guaranteed. And so it took us, I had Maisie, our little one-year-old, when I was 43 years old. And that, you know, at the time I was like, I can do it. I've still got energy. But it was also the time that my career was really starting to take off, because I'd been building it all through my 30s, and now in my early 40s, I'm getting asked to do podcasts, which is amazing. But at the same time, I've got this one-year-old at home who needs a lot of attention. She just started walking, so she's into everything all the time. So I've got to have my eyes on her and my hands out ready to stop her from, I'm like worried at the moment she's going to put her hand in the oven at some point because she's just exploring everything. And so it's really, I think it's really, really hard for women who are maybe want to have families, but don't feel as though they're ready. And even now to this day, I keep saying I would have a child in like 5 years. I was constantly 5 years away from being ready to have a child. And it got to a point where I recognized time was running out. I was worried about what you said, like, am I going to have anyone when I'm older, or am I going to be sat by myself having my little meal for one? And really felt that I wanted that developmental experience too. Like, I wanted that to feel what it's like to be a parent. And God, it's exhausting. Let me tell you that, to be doing it in my 40s now. It is, it's really, really tiring. But I'm glad that I did it. But it's that, it's exactly what you're talking about with your niece. When do you fit that in if you're trying to achieve all of these other goals? And I mean, I think we've got to start giving a message to women about assisted reproduction that it does not always work. So you are taking a chance. But maybe that's a chance that's worth taking if you're enjoying your child-free life. And I have to say, and I hope Maisie will not listen to this when she's older, but it's been a huge shift to go from having my freedom, being able to work whatever hours I wanted to work. I would love to go and see a movie right now, and I can't do that without forking out like $120 for a babysitter on top of movie tickets. And so I think it's really, really hard when you get used to being child-free to then suddenly switch to being a parent. And there's some benefits of doing it older, but again, there's no guarantees it's going to happen for you. And it's a huge identity shift kind of later in your life.
Wow. So, you know, just shifting for a second, for a point of comparison, how do guys do it during this time? I mean, what's their experience like? Because we kind of get the woman thing because we're living it and there it is and whatever. But what about guys?
Yeah, that's a good question. So there are some things that are similar. I think the career and care crunch is a little less intense for them, for sure. However, I will say there's a caveat to that, that there is more of a pressure now for men to be involved with raising their children. And so we are starting to see a little bit of those pressures there. There was one person who I interviewed who was really struggling because he wanted to spend time with his daughters and was also trying to work full time. And you could like listen to what he was saying. And it's like, I get this as a woman. This is how women have felt for decades. And I think also being pushed as a woman to, you're expected to provide that care. But here was a father who's like, I don't want to miss these magical years. I want to spend as much time with my daughters as possible. And so he had made a career choice that enabled him to work flexible hours. He wasn't making as much money. He didn't have as much prestige in the career that he had chosen, but he switched to do that just so he could spend time with his kids. And so we've got this intensive mothering norm where women are expected to be these perfect mothers and be there all the time for their children and like puree foods for them when you can easily buy it from the store, because that's a, you know, how you show your love. But I think now we're starting to see some intensive fathering too, where there's this pressure to be spending time with your kids and being a good dad. And then I think one of the other things, I was actually just looking at some data yesterday and noticing that, so I'm looking at some data right now and how people actually define adulthood during this period and whether or not they finally feel as though they are adults, because there's this assumption when someone looks at a 30-year-old, a 35-year-old, a 40-year-old, they think this person is an adult. But lots of people in that age range do not feel like adults. And I've noticed that this is especially true for some of the men who we've interviewed, who will, they look at the activities that they do rather than kind of an internal sense of feeling like an adult. So someone was talking about, well, I really still like playing with Legos. And so that makes me feel like I'm not an adult because I like to do these types of things. Like I make lots of stupid jokes and spend a lot of time messing around with my friends in the way that I did when I was a teenager. So I don't feel like an adult. So I think that's really interesting too, where I think maybe I'm slightly biased in saying this, but it does seem to be playing out in my data that women are there kind of taking on these responsibilities and men are a little bit more reluctant to do it. And I think this goes back to, so I used to be a gender researcher, by the way, I should probably point that out because it's relevant to this podcast, very much so. But I think it just goes back to these socialized gender roles where men are sometimes enabled to remain in this more childlike state because women have been socialized to take care of people. And so if a male is partnered, oftentimes they'll have, and they're heterosexual again, they'll have this female partner who is able to look after them and allow them to remain in this more childlike state.
Just thinking about this, it's like, I'm kind of glad I didn't really put a lot of thought into this when I was going through, because I'm exhausted just listening. You know, part of it was, also, people are, I think another reason why, especially women are pushing it out further is because there's more advanced training going on now. So I think more women are, you know, going into professional sectors where they have to train for longer, then there's internships, and then there's, you know, whatever it may be, one way or the other. And I think that there's just, I can't imagine. I mean, I was always shocked in my medical school class, like when people got married, like how? I can barely match my shoes in the morning. I mean, and you're going to get married and then some of them actually end up having a kid even during residency, the same thing. It's like, how? You know, I remember I had the opportunity to actually get married during that time. I remember having a conversation with myself and it went like this. There is no way in God's green earth, right, that I am going to drag someone through the hell that I'm about ready to enter. I just, when I'm not there, when I show up, you know, two or three times a week, but I'm gone and living in a hospital, how do you do that? The reason why I bring that up is because I think this advanced training thing is something that's really been occurring in a big way over the last probably dozen years. And, you know, when you look at medical school classes, in a large number of them now, women are the majority. So, you know, they signed on to a boatload of years. But, you know, at the same time, the training programs are becoming much more supportive when a woman shows up and says, I'm pregnant and I'm entering my second year of my residency. And they usually just work the call schedule and figure out how long she's going to be off. They never did that before because there were no women doing this.
Yeah. And I think that, and you're absolutely right that this extended training, and, you know, I'm working with undergraduates and everyone has this sense that when you graduate, you have to go to graduate school, especially in a field like psychology. And if you want to go to medicine, there's no choice. You like have to do this graduate training, which then stops you from being able to move forward in other areas of your life. And I do think that things have gotten a little bit better, but I think there's like the message that people say to you and then the reality. So it's like, yes, we're going to be supportive of women who might want to have children during this period. But I feel that sometimes it doesn't actually play out in reality. So it's like, we'll give you this time off, but then they're like, when are you coming back? When are you coming back? We need you back. And so there's lots of pressure still for women to figure out how to do it all. And your question also reminded me of a book I read many years ago, but I think is very relevant today still, is a book by Hannah Rosin called The End of Men. And she was talking about how in the middle of the country where all these manufacturing jobs dropped out, again, heterosexual married couples, the men who were losing their manufacturing jobs were just at home playing video games. And it was the women. So even if there were children that needed to be cared for, the men would just check out, doing whatever they wanted to do for fun and nursing their wounds and feeling bad. Poor me, I haven't got a job. And it was the women who were kind of looking at their family and saying, we need money. We need to be able to eat. and he's not doing anything. So I'm going to have to go out and get more education. So a lot of women went into pharmacy around this time period and would go and get these jobs, jobs that were now feminized, that used to be masculine jobs in the past, but have become feminized, would go out, go and get some graduate training, get these careers. But they were still coming home and having to do all of the domestic work in the house, because the men in these cases, their masculinity wouldn't allow them to do things to help out. So instead, they were just sad, complaining about how they couldn't get a job, that there was nothing for them. But it was the women who were kind of pulling themselves up and going out and trying to support the family.
Well, thank God things have changed. Not 100% clearly, but I think that young men coming through the system now certainly are taking on a lot more responsibility. And I think, you know, there's cycles of all of this back and forth. And I'm really happy you shared your own story, because your own story, you know, really spoke to so many of the challenges that are taking place right now. And I hear your story all the time. We're all a work in progress here. And I think we're still trying to figure this out. Oh my gosh. How can people learn more about your work? Tell us a website, whatever, because I can already think that if you're looking for participants in your research, I think that this would be fantastic, especially if people could do it remotely, because I know that you need to get a lot more data as you're beginning to push forward.
Absolutely. So thank you for saying that. Well, I always tell people the easiest way to find me is just to Google my name. So it's Claire Mehta. I do have a website, which is claremehta.com. But if you just Google Claire Mehta, you'll see a whole bunch of different ways to contact me come up. And I'm very, very happy to talk to people about this. And like you said, we're always looking to get more research participants. One of the things I'm hoping to do in the next couple of years is that someone will give me lots of money so that I can actually study people. The way that I want to do it is longitudinally. I want to watch people as they develop and go through this age period and be able to interview. So I do a lot of qualitative work. I interview people because I think that's how you get these really rich data points. And you can give people surveys and that's great and you get some information, but really understanding what it's like to be in this age period and what some of the challenges and rewards are, you need to hear people's stories.
What I did was, I want to make sure everyone knows that it's C-L-A-R-E, and then the last name is M-E-H-T-A, so that everyone knows how to find her. And the way I found her was the Lifespan Lab, where you can learn more about her wonderful work. Claire, I could talk to you forever, and my production team will shoot me if I keep this up. So all I can tell you is thank you for being on the Her podcast and for doing the marvelous research that you're doing, sharing your own experience as well as your research data. So on behalf of the Her podcast team, thank you so much.
And thank you so much for having me. And I should mention, I do have a book coming out, I think in February or March, which is on established adulthood. So it'll be Established Adulthood, Navigating the Complex Years from 30 to 45. So if people are interested, that is another way to learn more too.
Fantastic. Well, obviously, we're going to have you back.
Oh, that would be wonderful. I loved this.
Well, we're going to do it. There's no question. We'll promote the book, because I think what you're researching here is so important. Claire, good luck with everything.
Thank you so much.
Everyone out there, just like I said before, run on over to iTunes, rate and review this terrific episode, because we want your feedback. Here's another shout out to our sponsor, Solaray Vitamins at Solaray, SOLARAY.com. Use promo code HER20 for 20% off. And remember, it's the Her Life Stages products. You're going to love them. And all I can say is this has been just another amazing Her podcast. I'm Dr. Pam Peake, your host, and I hope that each and every one of you knows how grateful I am that you're listening and that you're such an important part of our Her podcast community. Pop on over to drpeake.com to learn more about my work and social media. Join me every single week for another Her podcast, where you're going to hear from extraordinary, entertaining, and engaging thought leaders like Dr. Claire Mehta. as we share our wit and wisdom for you to enjoy. So thank you so much. Remember that your time in this world may be limited, but the things you can do with that time are not. So get on out there and seize the day. Carpe diem. Have a great one.